You're listening to Ingredipedia, a factual food fight podcast where every episode we choose an ingredient and we fight about it. I'm Ben Birchall and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host, Emily Naismith. Hello, Em.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
A little bit of time between drinks.
Yep. Just about a week or so.
It has been a week. Don't go back and check the dates on when we upload episodes. But we are back and we're doing a special seasonal episode. We're recording this on Christmas Eve, Australia time. Hopefully it makes it to you while you're still feeling festive. And we've done a few kind of Christmassy episodes. Mm. We did cherries.
We did turkey. That gave Pat turkey food poisoning.
Oh,
that was really bad.
You nearly killed him.
So I wanted to do a safer one this time.
Yeah.
So we're going with ginger.
Well, ginger is good because it settles your stomach, which is a good thing if your partner poisons you with some poorly cooked turkey. It's associated with the Christmas and holiday season, as far as I can tell from the Northern Hemisphere, because it was thought to be warming.
Oh, right.
Which is where, gingerbread became a winter Northern Hemisphere thing, which we have, as everything, inherited for no good reason.
Good reason. It's delicious.
Well,
it's the best thing ever.
For those of you not in the city of Melbourne, it's going to be 35 degrees today. Not so hot tomorrow, but there's still going to be people doing roast potatoes and gravy and eating warming foods and spraying fake snow on their tree. But we are in a nice, cool studio and we're going to talk about ginger.
Well, I love gingerbread, specifically eating it. Making it is really, really hard.
Is it?
Have you made it before?
I don't think I have.
Well, I go on like a gingerbread making rampage every 3 or 4 years because that's enough time for me to forget how much it drives me crazy. In high school, I made gingerbread versions of my friends, and since then I've made gingerbread replicas of two places I've worked at.
Really?
Getting worse each time, just showing my level of care factor going down. Where I went wrong with the Clemenger one, you weren't there when I made it, but I made the gingerbread too thick. And it was just like a world of pain. It was so messy. I was giving it to the creative director and he's just like, took pity on me, I think. So I have forgotten about gingerbread pain since then and I really wanted to make gingerbread again. This time I went something a little bit easier, made gingerbread dogs.
Very nice. One in. Yeah, very nice.
And the recipe is from a website called Smitten Kitchen. I've never made anything from there before, but my friend at Broadsheet basically is the only recipe website she works off and she just brings in treats every week and it was just the best year ever and everything's so good. So I trusted it. The recipe is called Spicy Gingerbread Cookies and spice-wise, it's got ginger, cinnamon, ground pepper, salt and ground cloves. So where I may have, the first thing I did slightly wrong, ground cloves, I couldn't find them. So I got whole cloves and tried to bash them in a mortar and pestle. I couldn't get them that fine.
They are
the stick bits. Yeah. I had to individually pull out the stick bits and there are some stick bits in there. So now they're called gingerbread clove surprise dogs.
Well, I mean, dogs like sticks, so it makes sense for there to be sticks in a gingerbread dog.
And then the wet ingredients like butter, brown sugar, eggs, molasses. Second thing I did wrong, couldn't find molasses. Don't even know what it is, so I used treacle. This whole process took me 3 days, by the way, because first of all, you have to make the mixture, which takes forever, and then you put it in the fridge overnight.
Yeah.
Then you cut out all the shapes, which takes forever because there's like a metric F-ton of gingerbread and I made about 100 dogs. And then you have to bake them and then wait and then I couldn't do it that day because I hated them so much and then the next day I iced them. So that's the story of how my gingerbread dogs came to be. And now you can give me the verdict.
Okay, all right.
Don't choke on a clove.
I feel bad breaking off the dog's leg, but I've broken the dog's leg off.
I don't think they're very sweet.
I haven't got any sticks.
That's good.
They're good. There's good. All right. There's a lingering spice happening.
Yeah.
Like it happens after the first. Yeah, that's great.
Cool.
And it's not too sweet, which is good.
I think with the icing collar, it might be a little bit sweet when you get to the head, but yeah.
That's great. That's worth 3 days. And
thank you.
So it'll be another 4 years until that happens again.
Maybe it's five.
Like the Olympics of Christmas.
Yeah.
I feel honored. Thank you. Well, let's keep talking about gingerbread men or gingerbread.
Gingerbread people. People. I would like to say.
Well, we'll get to that. So how long have they been around for? I hear you ask because, and were they in the Civil War?
Yeah.
Yes, people did serve gingerbread to recuperating soldiers during the American Civil War. I looked it up, but I thought just as a Christmas present to you, Emily, I'm not going to do any facts
I'm
about
grateful,
the Civil War. But they've been around for a lot longer than the American Civil War. According to Rhonda Massingham Hart's Making Gingerbread Houses, the first known recipe for gingerbread came from Greece in 2400 BC. Chinese recipes were developed around the 10th century, and by the late Middle Ages, Europeans had their own version of gingerbread. So by the time it's made it to Europe in those late Middle Ages and then coming up through the sort of Enlightenment period, people started, you know, they were, I guess, a symbol of wealth because ginger was hard to come by, spices were hard to come by. So the wealthy liked to play with their gingerbread, and that's where the first gingerbread houses came from. The first gingerbread figures, people, apparently Queen Elizabeth I is credited with the idea of decorating the cookies in this fashion, and she had some made to resemble the dignitaries visiting her court. So in a sense, they were a form of diplomacy. So yeah, according to Carol Levin, this is from an article in Time magazine, director of the Medieval Studies Program at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and author of The Reign of Elizabeth I, Queen Elizabeth was known for her elaborate royal dinners that included marzipan shaped like fruit, castles and birds, and then her retinue also included a royal gingerbread maker. So she did a banquet where she had gingerbread men made to represent foreign dignitaries and people in her court. And also as a form of, not only as a form of diplomacy were they used in this time, they were also used by folk medicine practitioners. This is also from the article in Time magazine. So basically witches or magicians, as they were described, would create gingerbread people as love tokens for young women. If they could get the man of their choice to eat the gingerbread man that had been made for them, the idea was the man would then fall in love with the young woman.
Magicians are already so creepy, and that just confirms it.
And then, as I mentioned also, the gingerbread during the sort of holiday season can be attributed to the belief that spices heat you up in winter, which is according to Michael Crondall, the author of Sweet Invention, A History of Dessert. So that's kind of, you know, a potted history of gingerbread and gingerbread people. And so where has that left us? You might have seen this in the news in the last couple of weeks. A Fox News pundit named Tammy Bruce was discussing a supposed ban, which actually wasn't a ban, in Scottish Parliament of the term gingerbread man. And she was discussing it with Fox News host Tucker Carlson. This is how it went.
I contend after a series of, you know, living your entire life being kind of bullied into what you can and cannot say and presumptions that you're bad people, that it can be the smallest thing that tips you over the edge. That's the tipping point. And in this case, it's, you know, calling gingerbread men a gingerbread person when obviously they're men.
Well, so maybe the lesson is that the rest of us shouldn't participate in our own spiritual neutering, and
that's
that we
correct.
Should at every step along the way say I'm not complying with that.
That is
I'm sorry.
So that's where we've ended up. 6,000 years of gingerbread history, or well, okay, my maths is bad, but about 4,500 years of gingerbread history, and we've ended up here. Spiritual neutering, Fox News hosts in furious agreement with each other about the use of gender terms with gingerbread. All I'm saying is it's the end times and it's probably going to be the last Christmas.
Well, Pat actually made some gingerbread penises, so maybe we should give them to them, those guys.
Well, and will they say that they're obviously penises?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Saved. Christmas saved. Thanks, Pat.
So I really haven't moved very far from gingerbread here, but I want to talk about ginger snaps.
Okay.
Do you know what those are? Those biscuits that are kind of like ginger flavoured with a little bit of sugar on top?
They're super hard, aren't they?
Yeah, and they're kind of spicy and sweet and delicious.
Yeah.
There's the Arnott's version, there's a home brand version, there's probably fancy versions out there, but they're my ultimate biscuit. Dipped in tea, delicious, softens them a bit.
Really? That your ultimate biscuit? Like better than Tim Tams or Kingston's or whatever people think their favourite biscuit is?
They're my favourite thing. It. Yeah. But yeah, so I don't have anything bad to say about them up until about 6 months ago when there was an incident involving ginger snaps and me.
Oh.
What happened was I ate a lot of ginger snap biscuits, probably about 11 or 12 within a 1 to 2 hour period. And then the next morning I woke up with the worst cold I've had in years. Like really, really sick. And it took me 2 months to get over this cold because like went into my lungs and I have cystic fibrosis. Oh, it was like hell. And ever since then, I've been scared of ginger snaps because it reminds me of getting sick. Wow. So I thought I'd use this podcast to investigate, did the ginger snaps contribute to me feeling really sick?
Well, because ginger's meant to be,
I know,
a treatment for colds and
exactly. Yeah. So maybe my body was craving ginger, like it knew it was getting sick, and I'm like, I need some ginger snaps.
That's a good theory.
So I don't think the ginger snaps infected me. Obviously, I can blame a coworker for that, and I know exactly who infected me. But
if you're listening.
But did the ginger snaps intensify the cold and made it the worst cold I've ever had? So I'm going to try and find this out. So I think the listeners would be aware that I dabble in diabetes. I technically have it, but I can manage it without insulin. But obviously eating 12 ginger snaps within a 1 to 2 hour time frame is going to send your blood sugar levels through the roof.
Uh-huh.
So my first question is, does high blood sugar levels make you more likely to get sick? So I found an article on Science Daily, a study actually, that said, it appears that high blood sugar unleashes destructive molecules that interfere with the body's natural infection control defences. So that study was about infections in the feet and hands, but I assume it's the same all over a body. And that's the great thing about science is you can assume and it's probably correct.
assume, probably. That all sounds scientific.
There was also a lot of information that says when you're sick, your blood sugar levels are elevated anyway. So maybe my like base was really high and then that just like skyrocketed it. So maybe I already had elevated levels when I was eating the biscuits, blah, 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 blah. But I ate 12 and made myself feel even worse. And then, yeah, as you said, maybe the ginger made me drawn to it because like ginger is a health thing. Ginger is actually anti-inflammatory. Mm. So maybe it was cancelling it out. But I guess what I found is if I wanted the inflammatory properties, I should have probably had like a ginger juice or like just straight ginger or ginger tea.
Yeah.
My answer is eating 12 ginger snaps didn't positively affect my health, unfortunately. They didn't make me sick, but they didn't help me get better at all. Therefore, ginger snaps still reign supreme.
Okay.
And it's safe for me to eat them again.
Assume, guess, science.
Yes.
Okay, Em, I'm glad that you survived the ginger snap scare of 2018.
Thank you.
Because I need to ask this question of you. Who is your favourite Spice Girl?
Oh, I was looking into Spice Girls for this, but I couldn't think of a way to make it work. Ginger.
Yeah, right. Okay.
She was always the one I dressed up as.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're wrong. Clearly Sporty was the best singer and Stop is their best song, but I digress.
Stop is so, so much not their best song.
Kind of is. But I want to talk about the nickname Ginger.
Yeah.
And because it has become the go-to nickname for a person with red hair, which is weird because ginger is not orange.
That's true. That's true.
It's slightly orange, but there's way more orange things in the world. Carrots, oranges. So how did ginger become the go-to nickname for a person with red hair? The internet was actually, you know, I'll be honest, I was just Googling ginger nickname origin, all that kind of stuff. There's actually not a perfect resource for it. I did find a pretty good website called Ginger Parrot, which is a website all like by, for, and about people with red hair. So shout out to Ginger Parrot. There's an article called Where Does the Term Ginger Come From? But there was a lot of Emily science in there. There's a lot of guesswork and assumptions, and they're talking about the fact that Ginger, the character on Gilligan's Island, helped popularize the term, but, you know, her name came from somewhere as well.
Did she have red hair?
She did. She did. But it goes well, you know, they trace it back to the 18th century. But, you know, thankfully when you sort of dig deep enough into the internet, you find horrific nerds everywhere. And where I found it was the English language and usage threads on Stack Exchange, which is some sort of question and answer type Snopesy, Reddity type thing. But the English language, I think I've probably used it before when talking about the etymology of a word. So some of the answers that came through on Stack Exchange, and again, it's an open thread. People are still contributing to it. But the first one that really made sense is that when we talk about ginger, ginger's the whole plant. We eat the rhizome, the root, the sort of root stem of ginger. So we only think of it as the root, but the ginger plant has green leaves and orange to red flowers. They're quite bright red flowers. And when you see, apparently this is from Stack Exchange, when you see the flowers, the reference to redheads is much more obvious. And they are like a big explosion of a red flower. That's one theory. And they've got citations of ginger as a colour dating back to the 16th century. So Sir Thomas Eliot, the lexicographer, is quoted as saying, it's all in Old English, but they're sort of talking about russet or ginger colour, but ginger's with a Y and colour's got an E on the end. So yeah, ginger colour, this is from 1552 and 1538, talking about ginger as a colour. And ginger as a colour was then carried through into the 18th century as well, as a description of the light red colour of cocks.
Of what?
Chickens.
Okay.
So that became what people describe them as. So this is in the OED. They just call it the OED, but the Oxford English Dictionary. A cock with reddish plumage, also a redhead or sandy person. And so from 1785, ginger-pated red cocks are called gingers. So that's 1785. So it was not used to describe people, but chickens. And again, from 1797, I suppose you will not find a better breed of gingers. So gingers were just a kind of reddish chicken. And then from that, it came to hair. And Dickens describes a mature young gentleman with too much ginger in his whiskers. Another source from 1889, ginger, a light red or yellow colour applied to the hair. So then it kind of went plant, chicken, hair.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
So that seems to be the etymology. So it went bright red flower of a plant to the colour of a chicken to ginger from Gilligan's Island to ginger spice.
In the research for this episode, I'm like, maybe it's ginger spice is not called ginger spice because she has red hair. Maybe it's like something to do with the food. So I just Googled it on the off chance. And I came on this website that's like, did you know that ginger spice isn't called ginger because she has red hair? It's because she wanted to be a botanist when she was a child and she was fascinated by the ginger plant. And I'm like, jackpot. And I actually started writing this and then I realized it was a joke website. So I'm really glad that you worked it in a factual way.
I'm really glad that you didn't contribute fake news to the internet, Emily. Jerry Halliwell, this one's for you.
So I was looking for some controversy with ginger because we've been talking about how great it is, how much it's used through popular culture, how it's like healthy, how it is used in sweet and savoury dishes, been used all over the world, been used for bloody years. So I wanted some controversy. I wanted some shade in this podcast. And I ended up finding some controversy in our own backyard. So I went on Trove and tried to find some controversy with ginger. That's what Trove's, where you can like look up old newspaper articles. So back in 1914, there was a little bit of a ginger crisis. Mm-hmm. So I'll read out an article from the Sydney Morning Herald from February 19, 1914, which is over 100 years ago. And it says, when ginger is not ginger. For some time past, there's been sold ginger to the retail trade at prices with which the importer could not compete. The ginger was done up in various forms, though most commonly the cheap ginger was sold ground. Investigation proved that the ginger sold so cheaply was not of the strength of other classes of ginger. Ooh. It was then discovered that exhausted ginger was being used. This exhausted ginger was bought from cordial manufacturers who had taken all the goodness from it in the making of ginger beer and ginger ale, and what was left was merely the fibre of the root. The colour was in the fibre, and when mixed with ordinary ginger and ground, it would pass muster on appearance. So the Board of Health quickly got onto the matter. Prosecution was instituted and heavy fines were inflicted. The exhausted ginger was bought at one... It says 1d, which I think is 1 pence per pound, whereas the landed cost of full-powered ginger is 5¾ pence per pound. Thus, it will be seen that the mixers were making an enormous gain in deluding the public. The Board of Health has referred the matter to its advisory committee with a view of specifically forbidding the sale of ginger exhausted by mechanical means. So it was a massive ginger stitch-up.
Whoa.
So much controversy.
Yeah.
And that made me think, can you imagine eating exhausted ginger? That would just be so disgusting. It would be so dry, so tough, no flavour. It would be like a tree root, I think.
Yeah, yeah, basically just eating bark.
Yes. So this holiday season, if you see ginger advertised for 1 pence a pound, don't go there.
I've got something for you, Emily.
Ooh.
Here's a candy.
Thank you.
So... this is a little bit going to be a little bit of a an experiment. Can we get through this fact while chewing on a Ting Ting Jahe?
I think mine's melted onto the...
Yeah, they do that.
Okay.
They used to be wrapped in little bits of paper. I don't like this new plastic wrapping. The way I grew up with them is they were all wrapped individually in this really kind of fine papery stuff because they are the chewiest things in the universe. So... let's see how
this won't be good for my diabetes.
So, Ting Ting Jahe.
They're so chewy. But I really don't like the sound of people chewing on the podcast.
All right.
I feel like people will turn off.
Let's use the magic of editing. Because I thought, I'll just try and get through the fact while chewing. And there's no chance I'm going to be able to do that. So the magic of editing will come back when I've... swallowed this, I'll tell you how long it took.
Wow, they're so gingery.
Okay, we're back. That was a good solid 30 seconds of chewing, and I really forced it down in the end. I wanted to celebrate these ginger candies because they've been in my life as long as I can remember, and I kind of just figured that they were one of those things that were around forever, and they literally have been around forever. Since 1935, they've been made in Indonesia. They were first exported internationally to Holland in 1976. They've been in Australia since 1983. So they're actually relatively recent, but it's, you know, long enough for me to have always had them in my life. So they've kind of updated the packaging, which is a bit disappointing. These are some that I bought this morning. They used to be in this kind of paper wrapping, they say. So the company is Sina, which is kind of Indonesian for China. They have this kind of checkerboard pattern on them and a picture of a ginger root with some Chinese characters. And, I think they used to say Ju Hin on them as well, but they're not on them anymore. Now they say things like vegan and non-GMO and gluten-free. The ingredients are cane sugar, ginger, 7% ginger. So they're gingery.
They taste like real ginger as well.
And then there's, tapioca starch. That's the only thing in them. They always seem to be at my grandparents' house. My my grandpa, who was Indonesian, he always seemed to have them. And I feel like he had them before 1983. So maybe there was a black market in Ting Ting Jahe. We always ate them. We ate them in Indonesia. We ate them at my grandparents' house. And I checked with my sister last night. I'm like, Nana and Papa always had them. She's like, yeah, I don't know where they got them from. And also, after Yum Cha in Chinatown. You could always get them in Chinatown. So when we'd have our kind of, you know, every couple of months we'd have family Yum Cha, we'd always have them after Yum Cha, which I don't know whether it was to settle our stomachs after eating all those dumplings. The name for Ting Ting Jahe comes from the local ginger sellers who would ply their ginger wares door-to-door in Java, where these are made. So this is from the Ting Ting Jahe website, or the Sina website. One day, a middle-aged man came into the Kopi Tiam, which is the coffee kind of coffee cellar that the manufacturers originally owned, with one plate in his hands, which was as wide as his body, and hung on his neck by one thick rope tied to both sides of the plate. The man knocked the plate by one small hammer to make a ding-ding sound, and crying, "Ting Ting Jahe, Ting Ting Jahe." And so Mr. Yang, the inventor of the Ting Ting Jahe, thought that was a good enough name for his ginger candy. So I'm a fan. Lots of nostalgia for me. I've had them my whole life. And my mum's a massive ginger fan. She always wants, actually I haven't got any this year, like Daryl Lee ginger, like the chocolate-covered ginger, which you can get. She loves that. So, yeah, really tied up in my family, and I love them. But I found on the internet not everyone loves them, because ginger can be quite polarizing. It's not quite coriander, but there's people that just don't like the taste of ginger. So if you go through the Google reviews of Ting Ting Jahe, five star, positive, love these, really chewy, had them since I was young. I found a one star review from Lee M. "There are people who love ginger and those who don't. My evil niece gave me this candy, but I did not know it was ginger. So not a fan. So beware, if you don't like ginger, watch out for your evil niece who might be giving them to you. They are the chewiest things in the world, but I think a very, very pure expression of ginger. And I salute you, Ting Ting Jahe." Okay, what did we talk about?
My first fact was a gingerbread recipe, which is known as gingerbread clove surprise dogs.
And I talked about the history of gingerbread and why it is an expression of the end of times that we're currently in.
My next fact was the ginger snap incident of 2018.
And I talked about ginger as a nickname for people with red hair.
And then I spoke about the ginger stitch-up of 1914.
And I introduced to you and celebrated Ting Ting Jahe, the finest ginger candies this side of Java.
So you can vote for who you think had the best facts on our Instagram, which is Ingredipedia. You can like Ben's photo or my photo, and then that'll show us who you love the most.
And thank you very much for sticking with us this year. It was a little bit infrequent, but we'll be back next year, and we will be renewed and regular, and you know, it might actually just be the same as this year, but we hope you enjoy it anyway.
Yeah, and let us know if you want us to focus on any specific ingredient.
Happy 2018. We'll see you next year.
Happy 2019.
Well, I meant happy, hope you enjoyed 2018.
Okay, happy both years.
Happy every year.